more Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Think back to the last time you were in a hospital. How much plastic did you see? Doctors and nurses use a lot of plastic. Syringes, for example, which are only used once, come in a plastic sleeve, which is thrown away. Hospitals produce 14,000 tons of trash every single day, and up to a quarter of that is plastic. And those plastics are going into our bodies, even our brains, along with into the environment. Dr. Hilary Ong is an assistant professor of pediatrics and emergency medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and she's on a mission to reduce plastic in hospitals. She's joining us today along with Dr. Matthew Campen, a professor at the University of New Mexico's College of Pharmacy. They'll be speaking tomorrow at St. Luke's Lecture Series on Climate and Health. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you, Gemma, for having us.
Thanks. It's great to be on, Gemma.
Dr. Ong, let me start with you. How did you get started trying to reduce the use of plastics in hospitals?
Well, thank you for that question, Gemma. And again, I appreciate you having us on your show to talk about a topic of plastic pollution that I'm deeply concerned about. To answer your question, it's really through my healthcare sustainability work in the hospital and my reading of the medical literature and other reports that I became very alarmed over the past few years of the extent of our plastic pollution and its associated health harms. And as a pediatrician and mom myself, I've been advocating and educating colleagues and the public of the health harm of plastics and really focusing on my sphere of influence in the hospital to reduce healthcare's plastic reliance.
So Dr. Ong, how much plastic do you use every day in your work? I mean, I mentioned in the introduction, you know, plastic syringes, but what else do you see on a daily basis?
I come in contact with a lot of plastic products, and those numbers that you quoted are in fact alarming. In that, mm-hmm. that sort of equates to about 7 million pounds of plastic a day. Sort of doing that calculation of that 14,000 tons, and a quarter of that is plastic waste. I work in the pediatric emergency room, and I come across with a lot of single-use plastics, and I think healthcare now has a deep reliance on plastic medical products, and it has like revolutionized healthcare, and it has played an important role in the packaging and personal protective equipment, masks and gowns that you mentioned, the syringes. But mm-hmm. I do believe we have come to a point where we are sort of tipped over and relying too heavily on plastics as we understand more and more the health harms of plastics, from microplastics to toxic chemicals like phthalates and BPA. Just to give an example, in the emergency room, I use custom procedural trays like a laceration repair tray, and that comes with tons of plastics, from the plastic wrapping to the plastic trays and the plastic syringes you mentioned, and everything is single use and I just toss in the trash. And that sort of goes in circles from disposal in our medical waste streams and out in the environment, and which lands up in our food systems and our water systems, mm-hmm. et cetera.
So Dr. Campen, Dr. Ong mentioned microplastics. Can we talk a little bit more about that? What are microplastics and really how harmful are they?
Sure. So the microplastics are essentially the same thing as regular plastics. But mm-hmm. when we throw these things away, like Dr. Ong talked about, they get old and brittle and worn, and they break down in the environment, and they get smaller and smaller and smaller. They never stop becoming polymers, they just become smaller, and eventually they become micro, and we even now see nanoplastics that are smaller than a micrometer in diameter. And these things get through the soils, they get into our foods, they get into our bodies fairly readily is what we're discovering now.
So Dr. Campen, you did a study that found a growing level of microplastics in placentas. Can you talk to us more about that?
Sure. We've been studying a number of different human specimens in order to get a good handle on how much is in the human body, and therefore to help us model what could be the current and future health concerns related to this. And so we started with human placentas, which is a tissue most often discarded and readily available to us. And what we found was that there was around 100 micrograms per gram of plastics in those placentas, which may not seem like a lot, but we also found that in some placentas, it could be 6 seven, eight times that much. So then we've subsequently looked at other parts from autopsy specimens, and it's shown that the placentas are actually quite low compared to, say, kidney, liver, and even the brain, which is by far the highest thing we've measured to date.
Okay, so talk about this, the brain itself, because you say the average brain has like 7 grams of plastic in it. So just to, for people to understand that, that's about 1.5 of a plastic spoon.
Right. It's pretty alarming, our numbers so far. The plastic particles are throughout the brain. We're starting to get a handle on where they're located and why they get there. They seem to be slightly larger than plastics we find in other places, so maybe twice the size of the plastics we find in liver or kidney. We're not really sure how they get there because we think of the blood-brain barrier as being protective, but we suspect that these may be hijacking their way into the body as they associate with the lipids, the fats that we eat, and they get taken up that way, and the brain loves those fats for energy. And if you've ever tried to wash a Tupperware bowl that has bacon grease in it, you know that's going to take a lot of soap. Plastics and lipids and fats go together like, you know, peanut butter and jelly.
So, Dr. Campin, there's also a study out that shows high levels of microplastics in human testicles. I want to bring this up because this led you to start wondering if that might be part of a reason why sperm counts have been dropping around the world. Can you talk a little about that?
It's a big question. You know, for 50 years, for my lifetime, we've watched global trends of decreasing sperm count. Nobody has a really good idea as to why. And the only obvious thing is these plastics and the plastic chemicals associated with them, as Dr. Ong mentioned, the phthalates and the bisphenols and things like that, those are increasing in our world. There have been a handful of studies in this past year that have pointed to plastics in male genitalia, and it may help to explain why we do have reduced rates of sperm generation as well as erectile dysfunction may be impacted. So it's compelling, but we're still just at the tip of understanding what the impacts may be.
So Dr. Ong, can we talk solutions? Because a lot of this is single-use plastics, like you mentioned, syringes, tubing, gloves, things like that. So A, is there a way to reuse some of these devices? And B, how do you make sure that if you can do that, it's safe?
Thank you for that question, Gemma. But before I answer that, I just want to add to something that Dr. Camp mentioned, microplastics. And I want to add that it's not just the physical weight or irritation from the plastics, but I do want to remind all our listeners also that these small particles continue to leak toxic chemicals. So is it the sort of the physical irritation from the microplastics or the chemical leakage and the reaction from that, like Dr. Kapman mentioned, we're just at the tip of the iceberg for research. In terms of solutions, I'm going to focus on sort of my area of expertise, which is in healthcare. And we do have solutions out there, and it is a matter of commitment and knowledge from the healthcare industry, medical supplies industry, government regulatory bodies, et cetera. So solutions, I think it's a couple of fold. Our colleagues and I have a paper out in JAMA that was published a couple months ago that talked about a framework to healthcare action and reducing plastic reliance. I think first is really refusing. So refusing to use more plastics and thinking about innovative ways to reduce our plastic reliance. We've come so far in heavily relying on plastics over the past decade or so, and thinking about what my colleague had mentioned, going back retro. So thinking about how we can switch back to more reprocessable and reusable instruments that are glass-based or steel-based and really non-plastic-based, as there's more and more research coming out to suggest that the IV tubing, the intravenous tubing that we use, or single-use plastic product that we use in healthcare leach microplastics and leach toxic chemicals. And as an example, in my institution, we've got rid of phthalate-based IV tubing in our neonatal ICU, which is really data-driven.
So, Dr. Campin, if we just try to stay away from plastics as much as possible, would that be enough to keep them from getting into our bodies? Or I'm assuming the problem is probably bigger than that, at least at this point.
It's pretty insidious. That's a really important point. And Dr. Ong's correct. We need to reduce using the plastic materials in our world. But it's going to take more than that. I think we need to invest more in waste management. We need to understand where our plastics are going, how they move through the environment and get into the agricultural pathways, which is eventually the biggest source of plastic we eat is from livestock and from plants. So we have a big problem that touches every person on this planet right now. And I think back to some of the big environmental movements of the 1960s and 70s, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Air Water Act. We need those types of policy implementation changes to really make a dent in this, because we need industry to follow suit. We need the government to take charge and put some real investment into this. So it's much more than what we can do as individuals.
So Dr. Campin, I mean, given really some of the alarming trends you're finding in your research, should we be alarmed about how much plastic is going into our bodies?
Yes, I want people to be alarmed, and yet I also don't want people stressing, you know, because certainly we have enough stress in our lives, and cortisol is not healthy, and blood pressure needs to be maintained. You know, that's the reality. We need to be firm. I liked Dr. Ong's language, you know, refusing to use plastic when offered. You don't need that straw. You might be able to do without that lid or that extra piece. But we also need to start talking to our politicians and our leaders. We need to engage with industry as well. I've spoken with CEOs who feel bad about the situation we're in, but they feel hamstrung because if industry goes out, like if one company goes out and starts using post-consumer recyclable material that's like 25% or whatever, it may not look good on the shelf compared to the competitor with brand new polymer on the bottle. So we need to level the playing field and make sure industry moves forward as a uniform group under a regulatory structure.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for coming in and talking with us. We've been speaking with Dr. Hilary Ong. She's an assistant professor of pediatrics and emergency medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, along with Dr. Matthew Campin, a professor at the University of New Mexico's College of Pharmacy. We've been talking about reducing plastic waste in hospitals, and they will be speaking tomorrow at St. Luke's Lecture Series on Climate and Health. We'll make sure we put a link to the series on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.